We know some people are in the ashram are watching.
Bhagavatam in bed. It's better than nothing. Okay.
Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunya Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunya Bihari. Upi Janabalaba Iribadu Dahuti Upi Janabalaba Iribadu Dahuti. Yasoda nandana, ratajanu randahuna. Yasoda nandana, ratajanu randahuna. Yamuna tira, manachyaudi. Yamuna Tera Vanachari Jai Hurad Madhuva Kunjabi Hauti Radam Madhuva Joy Hurad Madhuva Kunya Bihari Gopi Jana Pallava Kiri Badadhare Iribarudhare Gopi Jana Balaba Iribarudhare Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Randahuna Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Manachari Yamuna Tira Manachari Jai Hurad Madhuva Kunja Bihati Jai Radhu Madhuva Kunja Bihati O Madhuva Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravitakacharya also Tada Satishi Shimad His Divine Grace Savaya Chananana Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupad Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupad Ki Jai Anandakoti Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Jai
Namacharya Shudhuiras Thakur Kijai. Purem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Shyam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturanam Kijai Jagannatha Swami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Shrimati Dulasi Devi Gajai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Gajai, Go Premananda Hari Hari Om. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Go Premananda. So, who's going to operate the screen this morning? Nobody. That's called a mouse. You just got to, after we recite the verse, then you'll have to page down. Okay. So, today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 20th chapter, text 10. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Asan utpata kamenyaha kshudra nadyo anushushyatehi humsoy itashvatantrasya deha javinha sampadaha Asanutpattagamenyaha Kshudranadjonushushataki Humso yatasva tantrasya Dehadravena sampadaha Asanutpattagamenyaha The Gamanya Kyutor Nadjo Nushushataki Humso Yatashvat Tantrasha Deha Dravena Sampadaha Asanupat the Gamanya Kshudra nadyo nushushitaki Humso yatashvana tantracha Deha dravana sampadaha. Okay. Sayita Swat Tantrasha Ravina Sampadaha Shushatahi. Mm-hmm. Okay, no one else. All right. Our son, they became Utpatagaminyaha, strayed from their courses. Kshudra, insignificant. What's the etymological analysis of this word compared to the word Shudra without a K in front of it? You don't think there's any difference, or it's just...
I'm not sure.
Okay. Got to study more. So, anyway. Nadyaha, the rivers. Anushushatihi, drying up. Pumsaha, of a person. Yata, as. Ashvatantrasaha, Tantrasya, who is not independent, that is, who is under the control of the senses. Deha, the body. Dravena, physical property. Sampadaha, and riches. Translation. With the advent of the rainy season, the insignificant streams, which had become dry, began to swell and then strayed from their proper courses, like the body, property, and money of a man controlled by the urges of his senses. So you can repeat. With the advent of the rainy season, the insignificant streams, which had become dry, began to swell, and then strayed from their proper courses, like the body, property, and money of a man controlled by the urges of his senses. It's interesting that word urges is like onomatopoetic. Does everybody understand what that word means? No. Onomatopoetic refers to a word that sounds like what it means. For example, when a cat makes a noise, what does it do? Meow. So meow sounds like what it means. Yeah. Anyway, that's called an onomatopoetic word. So like you have this word, it's really interesting. Urge. It actually feels like what it means. Like ring. You understand? Ring. So many words in English are like that, and Sanskrit too. So, purport by the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada comments, during the rainy season, many small ponds, lakes, and rivulets become filled with water. Otherwise, the rest of the year, they remain dry. Similarly, materialistic persons are dry. But sometimes when they're in a so-called opulent position, with a home or children or a little bank balance, they appear to be flourishing. But immediately afterwards, they become dry again, like the small rivulets and ponds. The poet Vidyapati said that in the society of friends, family, children, wife, and so on, we'll add husbands too, there is certainly some pleasure, but that pleasure is compared to a drop of water in the desert. Everyone is hankering after happiness, just as in the desert, everyone is hankering after water. If in the desert there is a drop of water, the water is there, of course, but the benefit from that drop of water is very insignificant. In our materialistic way of life, we are hankering after an ocean of happiness, but in the form of society, friends, and mundane love, we are getting no more than a drop of water. Whew. Sounds like a sannyas class today. Our satisfaction is never achieved, as the small rivulets, lakes, and ponds are never filled with water in the dry season. So I'm going to read the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and the other Acharya's commentaries, and then we'll read Prabhupada's ecstatic commentary on this verse in this book, The Light of the Bhagavat, and Prabhupada's different translation. Though the rivers in summer have little water, in the rainy season they become difficult to cross and cause disturbance to others. For one who does not follow the rules of scripture, swatantrasya, the assets of body, youth, ability, knowledge, and the material assets like control of 50 villages become a cause of disturbance for others. This is a negative example. And Jiva Goswami says, sometimes the rivers went off course and sometimes were dried up. They were not on course and were not without deficiency, just as the wealth, youth of body, and wealth of goods of a man who follows scriptures with an independent mind get diverted. That's interesting. Sanatana Goswami comments, previously dried up, the small rivers now went off course. Similarly, the bodies were first thin, pained by hunger, and later were supplied with enjoyment through commerce when people took to sinful life because they acted independently, swatantrasya. Therefore, they are insignificant like the small rivers, Shudra Nadyaha. Shuda Nadyaha. That's interesting. Okay, and then we will read Prabhupada's translation and commentary on the same verse in the light of the Bhagavad. This is number 7. The small rivulets that almost dried up during the months of May and June now began to overflow their banks, like upstarts that suddenly overflow the limits of expenditure. Prabhupada gives us many lessons here. One should learn gravity from the sea and the rivulet. The sea is always within its limits in spite of the many rivers pouring water into it. Similarly, one should properly use the assets of life and not squander them for purposes that have no permanent value. Uncontrolled, sensuous persons play with the assets of the body and accumulate wealth, but the strength of the body should be used for self-realization, not for sense gratification. Human beings have two kinds of temperament. Some are introspective, and the others are extravagant. Those who are extravagant, that's such an interesting word too, are enamored of the external features of the phenomenal beauty and have no insight into the whole manifestation. They are practically asleep to introspection, and thus they are unable to derive any permanent value from the assets of the human form of body. This word extravagant actually describes a particular politician who shall remain nameless. Just read this again, how it describes him perfectly. They are practically asleep to introspection. They are enamored by the external features of this phenomenal beauty and have no insight into the whole manifestation. What a perfect description. But one who has developed introspection is as grave as the sea, while those who are extravagant are calm and quiet in sleep. Such grave persons use the full advantage of the human form of life. You know, comparing the extravagant people who just like the only time they're peaceful is when they're asleep or in the hospital, intubated. Although the animal propensities of the body should be minimized, those who are extravagant temporarily overflow in material enjoyment. Nonetheless, as soon as the rainy season of life is over, they become as dry riverbeds. This also means that when one gets older, if one has just lived his or her life for sense gratification, they just like dried up old prunes, basically. Life is meant for the right cause or sought. And you see, so in life, Srila Prabhupada, who was never extravagant, who was always interested in Krishna consciousness, you would never say he was dried up, isn't it?
I mean, Prabhupada was more youthful, more energetic. When we went on morning walks with Prabhupada, Prabhupada walked faster than any of us. No one ever thought of him as being old. So, life is meant for the right cause or sat, that which exists for all time. In the material world, nothing is sat or eternal, but the bad bargain of the material world can be used for the best purpose. The mind dedicated to extravagance is a bad bargain, but one can make the best use of the mind by introspection. So, okay. So, Omagana Timidanda Shaganjana Shlakaya Chaksura Militam Yeda Tasmai Shigarve Namaha. So, I love this verse because it's something I've talked about many times before. In relationship to the description of Nectar of Devotion that talks about the different stages of sin. Sin, anyway. There's Kuta, Bija, Aparabdha, Parabdha, and then there's the actual sin itself. Anyway, so what are these different stages? The Kuta means we have an inclination. Actually, isn't it in Sanskrit? Kuta also means where. Pronounce it. Yeah. So Kuta, in this particular context, means the inclination, or it's a basic underlying foundational mentality of every conditioned soul, which is the inclination to be a separate enjoyer. Okay. And the bija is more specific. Bija means like a seed of a particular type of enjoyment. For example, you know, if I associate with my friends who smoke marijuana, because I don't even think I have any friends who smoke marijuana anymore. They're all dead. So anyway, if I associate with my friends who smoke marijuana, the desire for that specific type of activity will manifest in my heart. That's a bija. Or even if I hear, you know, some news, let's say, if I read about someone who's making a lot of money selling marijuana in California, you know, where it's legal, then the desire to go into that business will awaken in my heart. Or if I mean, it's like that. I mean, it's interesting how bijas, or the seed of desire, not only applies in regard to material things, but applies in regard to spiritual things. Just like sometimes I go on YouTube. Sometimes I go on YouTube and I watch this nice group, the Madhavas. You've heard about them before. And they're chanting, they're in Vrindavan, and they have these really beautiful music videos, right? You see them? And I just like develop a desire to be in Vrindavan dancing around Govardhan. It's true. Actually, it happens like that. And then sometimes I'll watch a video of this thing called the Lincoln Project. I don't know if you heard of that before. They're the people who are anti the president. And I'll watch them, and then I get angry at the president by watching it. It's interesting how the consciousness gets shaped according to what or who you associate with it. I mean, actually, we were reading in the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter, one of the verses that happens to be a verse that I quote quite often. Karanam gunasangasya sadasad janma jonishu. That one develops particular mentality, desires, or activities according to his or her association with the modes of nature. Gunasanga. So it's something like that with these bijas, the seeds. You associate with something and you get a particular type of desire. Like even eating certain food in certain natures, certain modes of nature, or having determination in certain modes of nature, or let's say work in certain modes of nature. Any of these things implant like a seed of desire in your heart. It's amazing. It's really amazing how that works. So anyway, so we explain Kuta, then Bija. And when you get this Bija, the Bija gets watered by more association. And then you do this activity. And then you've got your Aparabdha karma. Aparabdha karma means, I'm sure some of you are familiar with this, means a reaction that you haven't yet experienced. Aparabdha. And so it's just now coming. And you don't know what's coming tomorrow. Isn't it? That's what makes the world so scary. That tomorrow you don't know what's going to appear on the horizon. Or who's going to appear on the horizon. Or what disaster is going to occur. Or what good thing is going to occur. So anyway, so you get your Aparabdha, and then Parabdha, it comes. And your Parabdha karma is manifest not only in a negative way, but also a positive way by, you know, how intelligent you are, how rich you are, how handsome or beautiful you are, or how healthy you are, how sick you are, how many friends you have, or how many enemies you have. This is the Parabdha karma. And then all that Parabdha karma stuff feeds into your next bija and kuta. You know, kuta is already there, but the bija feeds into your next desire. So it's just like a vicious cycle. It goes on and on and on. So the reason I'm talking about that is that sometimes people appear to be extremely spiritual and very renounced in this world because the seed has not been watered yet. In other words, because they're undergoing some austerity due to past karma, due to circumstance, and they don't really have a lot of money, they don't have a lot of followers, they don't have a lot of whatever. So they appear to be, you know, very spiritual and religious. And then, and you see this in... Whoops, I better turn that off. You see this in many religious groups, not only in the Krishna consciousness movement, but you see this, you know, many Christian groups, or I'm not sure about Muslim groups. I've never analyzed that particular aspect. But many Christian groups, you actually see these big, big personalities. I mean, today or the last few days, we've been reading about one personality who was in charge of this big university, you know, Christian personality. You may have been reading the news. Of course, I read the news. I don't read newspapers, like Prabhupada said, but I read CNN. Anyway, so that's called like drinking water underwater while fasting on a fast day. So anyway, so you read the news, and this one guy, really famous, and his father was a famous preacher. You probably know who I'm talking about. Don't mention his name. His father was a famous preacher, and he's in charge of this big, big university. I mean, this is practically the biggest Christian university, maybe in the world, but at least in the United States. And as soon as he got a position and wealth and power, prestige, what does he do? He misuses it. But before that, you know, as a simple, humble preacher, you know, he's a great soul, you know, at least people are thinking like that. He's a great soul, inspiring others, praise the Lord, like that. But then as soon as he gets, this is in reference to the verse, as soon as he gets opulence, oh my God, I remember that there were other Christian preachers, one Christian preacher from North Carolina, in fact, and so famous. He even had an amusement park in around Charlotte. And then he's discovered in New Orleans with prostitutes. And I'm sure he was really, you know, sincere in the beginning with his religious practices. You know, he was a very, very good preacher. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's these pictures that come out or videos that come out with, I don't want to mention his name. And then his wife also, she becomes like a floozy. I don't know if you know what a floozy is. No, you know. Does anyone know what a floozy is? I guess I got to translate that. That means, I guess Krishnapriya can translate it better than me. A floozy is not just a loose lady. It's just like you know, lady lets it all hang out, you know, and spends money and goes into Saks Fifth Avenue, which has actually gone bankrupt now. Neiman Marcus. You heard of Neiman Marcus before? No. Anyway, some of you have. That's a floozy. Anyway, so she became like a floozy, you know, painted big painted lips that practically the paint was going up to her nose, you know, on the lips. This, you know, as soon as they get this up, not as soon, but, you know, it just grew on them. And then so even in the Krishna conscious movement, if you look at our history, I mean, which is sometimes, you know, has things that we don't want to remember in our history. You have people who were like really doing a lot of service for Prabhupada when Prabhupada was on the planet and, you know, really sincere personalities. And then when they're put in a position, let's say, become a guru with many disciples and wealth and, you know, all that other stuff, you know, dunam, janam, sundaram. You know, every morning we're chanting what? Nadunam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kabitamba, Jagadisha Kamaye. That, you know, I'm not interested in wealth or beautiful people. If you happen to be a lady, handsome man, you know, or followers. And all of a sudden you're put in a position, you know, wealth, followers. You know, you're flying first class in the airplane. I don't. So anyway, unless a disciple pays for it. So, and then you're really at silk dhotis. You know, I remember I took sannyas. The first thing the devotee said, you have to go and purchase silk dhotis now. So there are silk dhotis, Rolex watches. No, it's not Rolex. Yeah, it actually happened like that. And you see, Prabhupada had all that opulence, but it didn't affect him. Like Prabhupada sometimes was given a Rolex watch or had a Rolex watch, and then someone gave him a Casio. You know what a Casio is? It's a cheaper watch. Or even a Timex. Timex is about the cheapest type of watch you can get. And so Prabhupada, and then he would take off his Rolex and give it to that person in exchange. I mean, when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, I should have given Prabhupada my Timex. So Prabhupada was detached, but you see with it, whoops, there goes my Timex. So it's not a Timex. So Prabhupada was detached, but you see with the devotees who were not quite mature, they just got bewildered. And you see like so many of the people who were given high positions after Prabhupada left, you know, even the position of gurus, how many survived? Or how many sannyasis survived? Because as soon as you water the seeds, if someone has that seed in their heart, then it just fructifies. And if you don't water, wow, they're really austere. So what do you do about it? I mean, because it's a problem. How can you deal with that, you know, when many of us may have seeds in the heart like that, that just are waiting for the right water to fructify? Well, you have to be very attentive and humble and be careful when dealing with dunam, janam, sundarim. You know, there's natural inclination. If you get money, for example, you see people who win the lottery. Oh, buenos dias, senora. So people who win the lottery, I know you were watching on the internet. I saw you. I know you were watching. I saw you. You're a good girl. So there are people who win the lottery, and before that, you know, they appear like normal people, but then they just become ruined after they get all that money. And of course, they got a lot of friends until the money runs out. So the question is, you know, how do you avoid that happening? Or you become a little spiritually advanced and a little full of knowledge, and then you get bewildered. May not even have money, may not have beautiful people around you. But just because you have some knowledge, just like Queen Kunti, what does she say? Janmaishwarya, Shutashu Shibir, Renamana Adapuman. These things are very bewildering. Janma, good birth. One becomes very proud of that. Aishwarya, what is that? Money, opulence. Shrutasha, learning, or Shibir, that means material beauty. So how do you avoid that? Well, you got to, first of all, you got to chant, have good sadhana, and chant very, very seriously. And then also be introspective. Like Prabhupada mentions the word introspective here. So, and also the acharyas mention that. So introspective means you have to be able to analyze things and see if a particular desire that happens to pop into your little brain is conducive to Krishna consciousness or not. And if it's not, you don't meditate on it. As we know from the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, what is that? Jayato vishyak pumsam sankos teshu pajayate sankat sanjayate kama kama krodha bijayate krodha bhavati samoha samoha smriti vibramaha smriti brahm nashtabuddhi pranashyati. Very important verse. When you contemplate sense objects, attachment begins, right? So you have to be really careful. Now that you have the ability to exploit material nature more, of course, not, no one can really exploit material nature. Material nature is exploiting you. Now that you have the ability, you have to be really cautious. Like they say, if someone has a lot of money in their pocket, what's it hit? It burns a hole in their pocket, right? And they see something. Just like in my case, if I look at a Tesla, I mean, I could buy a Tesla, but and just I could have it. I could really have a Tesla. Then you don't contemplate it. You don't think, I could really have it. Oh, yes, I could really have it. I want it. And then one of our people comes to the temple, has a Tesla, and you look at it. Oh, nice. So anyway, so you have to avoid, you have to cut it off in the before it hits the feeling, willing stage. Like the mind has three stages in this particular context: thinking, feeling, willing. Just like if you see, let's say, take the food, for example. Let's say you have some food that's your favorite food. What's your favorite food, Adi Purusha? Pizza. That's worldwide, anyway. So if I right now keep saying, talking about pizza with cheese on it and tomato, whatever, however you pronounce it, tomato sauce on it, and olive oil and oregano, right? Oregano. See, he's already enthusiastic. You can hear in the tone of his voice. Already it's happening. And you're probably salivating. So that's feeling. So thinking, you know, I'm imposing this contemplation of sense objects on you, so you have to forgive me. So you think about it, feel it, like that, salivation, like Pavlov. I don't know if you know who Pavlov is. It's one of my friends who experimented with dogs. Anyway, so thinking, feeling, and then finally, okay, let's go over it after this morning class. We'll go over to Pizza Hut or order. I mean, we used to. We had someone, a devotee who lived next to us, and sometimes the guy with Pizza Hut came to my house. I said, it ain't for me. So the point is, as soon as there's the inclination to contemplate something, because then that's the seed of desire right there, then you just like put it away, even though you have the ability to do it. I mean, we all have so many abilities to do different things, and you don't do it. And then you realize something very interesting about material enjoyment. That in the purport, it was stated that, you know, it's like a drop of water compared to a whole ocean. The ocean of enjoyment is Krishna consciousness. But then you understand, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, that material enjoyment is simply, in a very real sense, the sense, the cessation of some imbalance. What I mean is, let's talk about needs. Okay, which is one of my favorite topics. Like, we have all these needs. For example, I don't now have a need for water, but let's just use that for example. Let's say I'm thirsty. That means I have a need for water, right? And so that's an imbalance. And so then I take this, especially in the summer, it's really pleasurable to drink cool water, isn't it? I mean, the other day I was thirsty and turned on my faucet and I didn't realize the hot water were, you know, there was previously hot water in the pipes, even though I turned it a cold. And then I put the cup to my lips and it was hot. Not hot, but warm. I just, woo, yuck. And then I just threw it away. Like, boom. And then turn on the cold water, let it run for a few seconds. Oh, delicious. So, because it was the cessation of a misery, or just like yesterday, it was really hot and sweaty. So I jump in the swimming pool and I go, wow, this is the life. You know, cools me down immediately because I was in distress. You know, really, these needs, the material needs, which I'm not decrying, we do have material needs. I'm not saying don't satisfy them. But it puts you in distress to have these needs, right? Or some imbalance. And then as soon as they're fulfilled, phew, oh, I'm so happy. So, all right, so I was swimming in the swimming pool, so happy, cool down. Okay, what's next? You know, once that need was fulfilled, this is boring. Let me then I get out of the swimming pool and what else do I do anyway? I run over to see what's happening in the construction over there. And then I had need to be creative. And then I talked to Happy about dividing up more rooms inside there, and I felt really happy that need was fulfilled. So throughout our lives, we're running after these needs. You know, we want love, we get a little cat, you know. It's good. I mean, it's better than a husband or a wife, you know, to easier to take care of. No, husband's better because he makes money. But anyway, so what the point I'm making is, it's just like Lord Chaitanya gave that example of the dunking stool. You know, when someone goes, the punishment, the ancient punishment, they were put on, in America, they used to do that too. They put you underwater, and then, if you're a criminal, and then they raise you after about 3 or 4 minutes, and you feel, breathing is so nectarian. But you're not doing that now. You're not thinking. So that's the material enjoyment. There is some enjoyment, obviously. But it's so insignificant. And one should keep reminding themselves of that. It is so insignificant. Yeah, I have this need. And then, but don't contemplate something that's unnecessary. You may have a need. Make some strategy to fulfill the need. Okay. But don't go crazy about it. Okay, on that happy note, which I'm sure will offend half of the devotees. So, all glory to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.